The Zionist troop opened fire from inside a heavily armored military vehicle at Yazan Muhammad Shataya 17 while he was allegedly throwing stones at the Zionist regime troops along with other Palestinian youths. 1 week before, on April 8, the Zionist regime forces shot and killed a teenage Palestinian girl at Tayasir checkpoint near Tubas, northeast of Nablus. Asma Emad Saad Daragme, 17, was allegedly attempting to carry out a stabbing attack when the Zionist regime forces shot her several times at a distance of around 10 meters, and that's according to DCIP. The Zionist regime forces refused to allow Palestinian medics to reach or treat Asma, the human rights group said, leaving her to die. DCIP said Asma laid on the ground at the checkpoint, bleeding heavily, according to eyewitnesses. The Zionist regime forces then confiscated her body. The fabricated regime of Israel has been routinely conducting prolonged military raids in towns, cities, and refugee camps across the West Bank, particularly in the north. The Zionist regime military raids often include highly destructive attacks on infrastructure, with the Zionist regime bulldozers damaging water pipes, roads, and power facilities. The Zionist regime army has also been conducting aerial attacks in the occupied West Bank, a practice it revived from the Second Intifada 2 decades ago. Israeli regime troops have killed at least 435 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, including 112 children, since October 7th. Additionally, Israeli settlers have killed at least 10 Palestinians, and another 6 were killed by either Israeli army or settler fire, according to documentation by UN Monitoring Group OCHA. The Zionist regime forces have injured nearly 4,900 Palestinians in the West Bank since October 7th.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, how to attain ultimate perfection as a part of our Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So what a beautiful title we have on today's program, and that is how to attain ultimate perfection as a part of our Islamic lifestyle. So to kind of, start to tread some of these shallow waters before we get to the deep end of the pool, is that Islamic lifestyle is what will help us to achieve ultimate perfection, right? A lot of times we go to, these, non-religious, or perhaps we can call them secular spiritual gurus and, sadhus and these kind of obscure, spiritual, secular kind of things that we kind of fall into, because we're looking for spirituality. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there who take advantage of this desire for spirituality of a human being. And they kind of get in there and they give you these kind of weird prescriptions, and then they ask you for money eventually. And, it's like a Ponzi scheme that people don't really realize what's going on. And it's interesting, when it gets really serious, we have this concept which is called Irfan-e Kadhib. It is translated as this Irfan, the spiritual wayfaring, which is false. It is based upon falsehood, or it is based upon incomplete truth, right? It's based on either one of these, but the consequence and the repercussions are the same, and that is danger and harm. Well, there you go. Danger and harm is what the consequences of this pseudo-secular, you know, spiritualism, which is based upon falsehood or half-truths. And that's something that we need to really be careful from, because yes, we want to attain ultimate perfection, but it is not done via these means. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about attaining ultimate perfection as a part of our Islamic lifestyle. So in the previous segment, we kind of set this fundamental pillar or foundation, which is that if you want to attain ultimate perfection, if you want to attain spirituality, then the way to go is Islamic lifestyle. There is no other substitute for spirituality and for attaining perfection. The only, complete and perfect and comprehensive, remedy or solution is Islamic lifestyle, and that too of the pure Muhammadan Islam, the Islamic lifestyle of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, and the infallible and immaculate Imams alayhim assalam. This is the Islamic lifestyle which will lead to ultimate perfection. So that's the second fundamental pillar. Don't go out there into this obscure trying to gain spirituality. You're just going to lose yourself, and you're going to do your spirit and your soul some serious damage. It's not worth it. Don't waste your time. So go to the Islamic lifestyle. And of course, the Islamic lifestyle is not something that is, incredibly difficult. Right, Allah says in the Holy Quran that we have made religion easy for you. The purpose and the goal and the end result of ultimate perfection is nearness to Allah. As we say in all of our actions, Qurbatan ilallah, I seek nearness to Allah. That nearness is ultimate perfection, and it is attained via very simple but profound things, such as fasting in the holy month of Ramadan, going to the Hajj, Zakat, Khums, right? The five daily prayers, the wajib prayers, recitation of the Holy Quran, the mustahabbat and the recommended things, and moral and ethical virtues. That is what's going to help you attain ultimate perfection as a part of your Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
The U.S. continues to provide full support for the Zionist regime's genocide in the Gaza Strip. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, "The events of early April seem to bear out the first line of T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland, that April is the cruelest month. On April 10th, on Eid al-Fitr, the celebratory end of Ramadan, the Zionist regime killed three sons and four grandchildren of Hamas political bureau leader Ismail Haniyeh in an airstrike on Gaza's Ashati camp. This adds yet more killings to the already staggering total, with Haniyeh himself having lost 60 family members to the Zionist regime's attacks. 3 days earlier, a Palestinian citizen of the occupied territories, Walid Daqa, after 38 years of imprisonment, died from a lack of adequate medical care for bone marrow cancer. According to his lawyer, Daqa had recently been subjected to torture and beatings. A writer and revolutionary thinker, Daqa formulated the concept of parallel time, linking the larger prison of occupied Palestine to smaller prisons like those he found himself in for close to four decades. As Mondobe's managing editor, Fares Riaskam, wrote in a brilliant tribute, Daqa was one of the few legitimate inheritors of Ghassan Kanafani's legacy. Kanafani, who likely needs no introduction, was born in Accra in April 1936 and lived through the Nakba as a child. He was assassinated in Beirut in 1972 along with Lamis Nijem, his 17-year-old niece. In the pre-drone era of Israeli assassinations of Palestinian cultural and political figures, this was carried out with a car bomb. The title of one of Kanafani's greatest stories, He Was a Child That Day, says it all. In a 1970 interview with Australian journalist Richard Carlton, Kanafani, a prominent member of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, was asked, "Why won't your organization engage in peace talks with the Israelis?" Kanafani stared silently down in front of him before responding, "You don't mean exactly peace talks. You mean capitulation, surrendering." Carlton continued, "Why not just talk?" Kanafani asked, "Talk to whom?" To which Carlton said, "Talk to the Israeli leaders." Kanafani replied, "That's a kind of conversation between the sword and the neck." Remarkably, as if on cue, at a crucial point in negotiations between Hamas and the Zionist regime, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken had this to say on April 9th, "We would not be where we are had they not chosen to engage in one of the most horrific acts of brutality and terrorism on October 7th, and had they then, having done that, not refuse these many, many months to get out of the way of civilians, to stop hiding behind them, to put down their arms, to release the hostages, to surrender." While the needle doesn't seem to have moved among the Western political alliance led by the U.S., the mask has been off for a long time in most of the rest of the world, and it is increasingly coming off among the actual subjects of these Western regimes, whose anger and disgust mounts daily. Indications of this are everywhere, from continuing protest to conservative commentator Tucker Carlson's recent interview with Palestinian pastor Munter Isaac, in which the pair excoriated U.S. congressional and evangelical support for the Zionist regime, a pillar of U.S.-Israel relations and funding. The dizzying events of the past few weeks tell us much about where things stand in the relentless mix of differently scaled atrocities and psychological warfare carried out by state actors and their willing accomplices in the media, academia, and professional associations. The official outrage, both genuine and feigned, over the targeted killing of 7 World Central Kitchen Aid workers has not been even remotely matched when it comes to the more than 34,000 Palestinian casualties of this genocidal slaughter. While the Zionist regime forces systematically target the Palestinian reporters, exposing their crimes, mainstream Western journalism appears to have accepted the rules of engagement laid out by those in power. Do not probe too deeply nor connect too many dots. In the meantime, we are exposed to a continually escalating news cycle, with the stories relentlessly pumped out at the expense of clarity and coherence. As journalist Pepe Escobar so scathingly put it regarding the attack on the aid workers, quote, "The logic behind the deliberate three-tap strike on the clearly signed humanitarian convoy of famine-alleviating workers in Gaza was to eviscerate from the news an even more horrendous episode, the genocide within a genocide of Ashifa Hospital," unquote. Escobar went on to write of the Zionist regime's attack on Iran's consulate in Damascus, quote, "This was a missile attack on a diplomatic mission enjoying immunity on the territory of a third country against which Israel is not at war. Translation, an act of terror against two sovereign states, Syria and Iran," unquote. This whole series of events, in addition to the Israeli-U.S. policy of using starvation as a tool of war, while covering up the ongoing genocide, aims to eliminate the possibility of accepting Hamas, which is considered a terrorist organization in the UK and other Western regimes, as a credible negotiating partner. As Palestinian human rights attorney Diana Bato put it after the assassination of Haniyeh's family members, negotiations, Israeli style, between obligatory crocodile tears and theatrical anger, the U.S. regime continues to arm and provide full support for the Zionist regime's genocide, while pleading for the child-killing regime of Israel to call a ceasefire and allow food into Gaza through more crossings, all while holding veto power at the UN Security Council.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Tour the pitch.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islamati. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon him. I am Muslim. for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners from all around the world. Welcome back to a new episode of
Youth Station.
I am Beta.
And this is Mustafa.
Brothers, you know, we're living in a world that everybody is like, okay, I do care about myself. And whenever I don't have any problem, I have nothing to do with other people's problems. Okay. So we are living in a world like that. And at the same time, when we go through the Islamic teachings, we see that you have to be the voice of the oppressed people. And even we have so many narrations and verses in the Holy Quran, and this narration from Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, that you have to be the voice of the oppressed people. And if you're not, you're not a member of our ummah. And so it means that this is one of your absolute responsibility to be the voice of people who are in need. But unfortunately, this is something which is being ignored and being indifferent towards, unfortunately. So what can we do about it?
Yeah, I think, by the way, a big part of it is, you know, and you'll hear this maybe in English, is that collectivism or individualism.
Yeah.
Right? When we talk about different cultures, for example, typically when we talk about Western culture, they focus a lot in individuality, which means that the individual should be successful. The individual, you know, should be independent. For example, you see that, in many Western societies, when you turn 18, you're expected to leave the house.
Yeah.
You're expected to, like, have a job. You're expected to do everything on your own. If you don't, then you're considered a failure. On the opposite side, we have collectivism, like you said, you know, and that's something that's strong among Eastern cultures, not only Islamic. Like, if you go to India or China, a lot of these people are considered, you know, a lot of these considered collectivism.
Yeah.
And the idea behind that is that you work together, you know, that you help each other. If somebody's down, you help them, you know. In fact, in Pakistan, if you said you want to leave the house at 18, you're going to get slapped, you know, for your dad.
Yeah, it's like you're the complete opposite.
So there's this sort of now mixture of these two right now, right, where we're seeing that people are becoming, I would say, individualism creates selfishness, right?
Yeah.
Where people only care about themselves, and that's not good. That's not a good thing.
Yeah, actually, it's a vicious cycle. Selfishness will lead to individualism itself, strengthen this attribute of selfishness in people. And another thing is that because of the impact of Western countries and Western culture on Eastern society and Muslim countries, our youth generation is like, I want to be independent. I want to go out of the home sooner than what I want. And, you know, they're like, I don't want to have children because there are burdens and something like that. You know, they are destroying the meaning and value of family. And I believe it is equal to individualism itself.
There's papers specifically written about how, for example, one of the, by the way, agendas that's out there is reducing world population. They say there's too many people, you know, in the world. The world can't, there aren't enough resources, for example, in the world. So the world's population needs to be reduced. So a big part of that is breaking down the family. And the way you break down the family is you promote individualism and selfishness, right?
Yeah.
That you really only care about yourself. And we're seeing the negative effects of that right now, right? We're seeing it in our own families, I would say. We're seeing, like, when people do those kind of selfish things, we're seeing, for example, divorces are increasing. We're seeing problem with having much more mental disorders. We're seeing so many other issues. That's because of this.
I agree with that. Yeah. Brother, there is another dimension to this topic that, for example, if we want to change the world, we have to start this change from ourselves.
Mm.
I mean, sometimes people and individuals, specifically a generation, things like that, okay, I have to change myself first. I cannot change the world ambitiously.
Yeah.
So what do you think about it? But let's have your idea
after
a short break. Stay tuned, dear listeners.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back. This is Youth Station, where we're talking about individualism and collectivism. And we get to this point that some people justify and defend their individualism with this excuse that, okay, I have to first change myself. I cannot help other people if I don't have this resource to do that.
Well, it depends, right? I think sometimes that may be correct in the sense there is. I'm not saying it's completely negative, like individual. There are positive aspects to it. And of course, you have to care about yourself, your own health. I don't know. You know, when you sit on a plane, they tell you, for example, if there's a lack of oxygen, you need to wear that first.
Yeah.
And then you put it on the child, right? Because if you don't do it yourself first, you're not going to be able to help the child either, right? You're going to faint. So there, nobody's denying that, you know, that you don't care about yourself or that you only care about others. I think it's having a right balance between the two.
Yeah.
If, you do, you should care about yourself. You should take care of yourself. But it's in a positive manner, right?
Exactly.
You shouldn't be doing it at the expense of others.
In a selfish way.
Yeah, it shouldn't be that for your own like benefit, like for your own sake, somebody else is being harmed. That's what we're saying. When we're talking about being selfish, it's like we're doing things at the expense of others. You don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to cause... And by the way, one of the harms of being selfish individualism in the long run is that it causes you harm.
Yeah.
Right? Because...
How come?
Like, think about it. If you're living in a society where people only care about themselves, when you need help... Is there someone going to be there for you?
No, for sure. You have only yourself.
And that's what you see in a, you know, I was watching this interview of this guy in America who became homeless, right? And he said that, you know, nobody's helping me. My own family's not helping me. And now he's homeless.
Yeah.
Right? So is that, that's what I'm saying. It can go to a very extreme form. And we need a balance between those
exactly.
two. Exactly.
You know, I saw the same documentary. I think it was about homeless people.
There's so many, by the way, out there.
Yeah. And they are so sad, all of them, because they don't have a family to come back to. And it's like you're cutting your blood line and you don't have anyone in this world. And even in some countries, we have some institutions for lonely people because one of the consequences of this individualism is that you will end up alone. Okay, you don't have anyone to rely on. You don't have any friends. You don't have anyone to rely on whenever you're in trouble. And these are the problems. And human beings are social beings. We cannot cut our connection with other people. It's impossible, I believe. I believe every human being needs solitude sometimes. You have to be alone. You have to think on your life, on your process, what you did up to here, what you were going to do from now on. And these are the points, but it doesn't mean that you have to be selfish, you have to put yourself as the priority in the expense of others.
Right.
And I believe other times that we have to remember the meaning of sacrifice and the meaning of martyrdom. Martyrdom is the most beautiful and complete example of sacrifice.
Right.
And in order to not be deviated to the road of individualism, we have to search throughout the history and see the sacrifices that made for us to be here, to live in peace.
And, you know, I have a friend who lives in France, you know.
Yeah.
I met him when I was living in the United States. And he lives by himself, okay. He hasn't managed to get married. And then he suffered through a lot of depression. He tried to kill himself twice, okay.
Oh, my God.
Now he's doing much better because, he's, you know, he's gotten help and things.
Thank you.
But it's a common problem in those societies, you know,
yeah.
that they're not able to get married. They don't have their... His parents are there. He has sisters, you know, but they're not able to rely on each other, right?
Yeah.
So the harm, I think, is very, very apparent of, like, you know, only caring about yourself. You know, it's going to hurt you, like I said, in the long run. A human being is like, we're created in a way where we need each other.
Exactly.
Right? Or another example I can give is if you look at Japanese society, it's probably one of the like most lonely people in those societies, right?
Yeah.
Did you know that in Japan, like you can pay someone to be your friend?
Oh my gosh.
Like that's a job. Like
it's so sad.
That's a job that's available that, you know, that I could be hired just to talk to someone. Like, they literally pay people just so they can talk to them.
Yeah.
Or accompany them, for example, for dinner or something. That's, what kind of society is that? Is that what we want?
No.
Is that what you want? Like, I mean, I wouldn't mind getting paid to talk to someone, but, you know, on the other hand, it's what I'm trying to say, that it's bad.
Yeah, it is too bad. And I believe we have to rebuild these meanings and these values of our life. For example, about friends, I believe that the youth generation have this problem because we think when we're alone, we are more successful, we are more productive, but this is not true. I believe every educational system should focus on this group work, teamwork. Teamwork is really important to show the people that you need each other in order to be productive, in order to develop.
And by the teamwork that you mentioned, by the way, so in the same societies that promote individualism, you'll find that teamwork is also being emphasized. But where is it being emphasized? In businesses. Okay.
Oh.
Why? Because they realize that by teamwork, you can, you know, if people work better, they're more productive, they produce more, and therefore they produce more profit for that company.
Yeah, exactly.
So you see that even in those societies that they realize the need to do teamwork. Right? Yeah. I remember when I used to do like job interviews, one of the questions they would ask is, how much experience do you have with teamwork? What do you think of teamwork? You know, what kind of examples? So we're saying what we're saying is we need to broaden this teamwork in the rest of society, in all aspects of society.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
And of course, the result will be positive of that. Of course, if we work together, things will be better. That's the whole. Yeah. That's how societies are formed. So it's only logical.
It is.
Right?
And the logical thing is that we have to go for a short break.
Okay, got it.
Effect of teamwork, and that even in the most individualistic countries like Japan, like some Western countries, even at those countries we have this teamwork, specifically in business content, that we need to be productive. And it shows that even if we try to deny the fact that we need each other, we need each other.
By the way, I think one source of like sort of some individualism comes in when we want to go after our desires, right?
Right.
Right? Because a lot of times that's when like other people come in the way, is that I would say, hey, I want to smoke, I want to drink, I want to like, you know, have relationships. And now like, you know, my family's coming in the way.
Exactly.
Right? So we have realized that individualism is really an excuse many times to pursue your own selfish, low desires.
Yeah.
Right? And then that can, by the way, result in a terrible sort of... But the friend that I mentioned, you know, right before the break,
yeah,
right? He's a good example of that. He
exactly.
pursued every pleasure that you can imagine when he was young. And now he's in a situation where he was almost suicidal. He's alone and he's lonely, right? I would tell the youth that, look, do you want to live a lonely life, you know? Is that what you want? You know, do you want to have just superficial relationships or just temporary pleasures? And then once you're older, what's going to happen?
Exactly.
You know? Who's going to be there for you when you're older? Are those friends that you have right now, are they going to be there for you? They're not going to be there for you. So just, you know, having family, having people around you is going to be a big source of happiness, a big source of help for you. You know, it's going to make your life better. Like, I can't emphasize that enough.
And I believe that living in this materialistic world, that most of the people believe that you are a materialistic creature. You have to keep that in mind. You are spiritual, but you have a materialistic dimension. And in order to feed that materialistic dimension, don't sacrifice your spiritual part.
Individuality can be important when you're establishing your relationship with God. That's where you should place value on it.
Yeah.
In your personal worship with God, you know, in your personal obligations towards God, those will impact the rest of, like, you know, people around you as well.
Exactly.
That's where it's important. And I guess we're out of time, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, we're out of time. There is a lot to talk about this topic. But thank you, dear listeners, for listening to us. I wish it was helpful for you. And wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that, inshallah, in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif,
Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Allah, Allah. Allah, Allah, Allah.
In the limelight.
The United States' veto of a draft resolution recommending that Palestine be granted full membership at the United Nations has been met with widespread global condemnation. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website Axios has written about this story and tells us more. The United States has predictably cast its veto against a bid by the Palestinian Authority for Palestine to be recognized as a full member of the United Nations. The United States, the Israeli regime's biggest ally, blocked a relevant draft resolution that had been put to vote at the 15-member United Nations Security Council on Thursday, 18th of April. Britain and Switzerland abstained from the vote, while the remaining 12 UN Security Council members voted yes. Vanessa Fraser, permanent representative of Malta, the Council's rotating president, said the draft resolution has not been adopted owing to the negative vote of a permanent member of the UN Security Council. Palestine is currently a non-member observer state. An application to become a full United Nations member needs to be approved by the UN Security Council, and then at least two-thirds of the UN General Assembly need to vote for it. Russia's United Nations Ambassador Vasily Nebenzia said the US once again demonstrated what they really think of the Palestinians. He said, for Washington, they do not deserve to have their own state. They're only a barrier on the path towards realizing the interests of Israel. Citing unclassified U.S. State Department cables, The Intercept, an online American news organization, reported on Wednesday, 17th of April, that Washington was secretly pushing members of the U.N. Security Council into rejecting Palestine's membership bid. One cable read, "We urge you not to support any potential Security Council resolution recommending the admission of Palestine as a United Nations member state. Should such a resolution be presented to the UN Security Council for a decision in the coming days and weeks." The report said the countries being railroaded into rejecting the statehood included Malta, adding that Ecuador in particular was being asked to lobby Malta and other nations, including France, to oppose United Nations recognition. Zhang Jun, the representative of China at the United Nations, said during the Thursday vote that the decades-long dream of the Palestinian people had been quashed at a time when the admission of Palestine as a full member of the United Nations was more urgent than ever before. Iran's Press TV has also covered this story and tells us more. The spokesperson for Iran's foreign ministry has strongly condemned the irresponsible and unconstructive U.S. veto of a Palestinian request to the United Nations Security Council for full UN membership, blocking the world body's recognition of a Palestinian state. The Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesperson Nasser Kanani said on Friday, 19th of April, Washington's move disclosed the hypocritical nature of the U.S. foreign policy and the isolation of this country's position within the international community more than ever before. The vote at the 15-member United Nations Security Council on Thursday, 18th of April, on the statehood of Palestine was put forward by Algeria, which represents Arab nations under the UN Security Council. Nasser Kanani said the US provides unilateral and unlimited support for Israel in the political, economic, military, legal, and international fields. He added, Washington's ineffective support for the Tel Aviv regime is at the expense of the American people and at the cost of sacrificing regional and international peace and security over the past seven decades. The Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesperson emphasized the U.S. support for the Israeli regime has disgraced it on the world stage and proved that the country is not a neutral player and a responsible actor in the international community. Kanani once again reaffirmed the Palestinian people's legitimate and undeniable right to form an independent state with the city of Al-Quds as its capital across the historical land of Palestine from the river to the sea. Nasser Kanani pointed out, the Islamic Republic of Iran believes that the will of the resilient and heroic people of Palestine will ultimately overcome the will of the enemies of the Palestinian people, especially the fake apartheid Israeli regime. The website of Syria Times has also covered the same story and tells us more. Syria has condemned the United States after it vetoed the resolution backing full United Nations membership for Palestine. The Syrian Foreign Ministry, also in a statement on Friday, 19th of April, condemned the US veto, saying it showed Washington's blind bias in favor of the Israeli regime. The Syrian Foreign Ministry stressed that hindering the establishment of an independent and sovereign Palestinian state would only prolong insecurity and instability in West Asia region. It said insecurity originally arose from Israel's ongoing occupation of Arab lands and its perpetration of the most crimes of aggression against the Palestinian people. The United States was the only nation in the 15-member UN Security Council to veto against the resolution on Thursday, 18th of April. The US action has drawn condemnation from many countries, especially Muslim world. The US action has drawn condemnation from many countries, especially from within the Islamic world. Washington's veto came amid the Israeli regime's war on the Gaza Strip that has increased sympathy towards Palestinians and international calls for recognition of an independent Palestinian state. Since the start of Israel's offensive on Gaza on 7th of October, Israel has massacred tens of thousands of innocent Palestinians, many of them women and children. The English website of Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation, OIC, has slammed the United States for blocking Palestine's request for full membership in the United Nations amid a genocidal Israeli war on Gaza. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation, OIC, said in a statement on Friday, 19th of April, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation expresses its deep regret at the failure of the United Nations Security Council to shoulder its responsibilities for granting the State of Palestine full membership at the United Nations, while the Palestinian nation are being subjected to the harshest level of aggression, persecution, and genocide. According to the statement, the United States' veto of the draft resolution, which recommended granting Palestine full United Nations membership on Thursday, 18th of April, violates the provisions of the United Nations Charter, which allows membership for all countries that accept the obligations contained in it. The OIC stressed that the US move prevents the Palestinian people from obtaining their legitimate rights and contributes to prolonging the historical oppression imposed on the Palestinians for the past 75 years. Stressing the legitimate right of Palestine to embody its political and legal status in the United Nations, the organization said the recognition of the state of Palestine contributes to achieving peace and stability globally. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation, OIC, praised the countries that voted in favor of the draft resolution, saying their position demonstrates their support for truth, justice, freedom, and peace, and their rejection of policies of the Israeli regime. English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor, Israel. Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of a speech delivered by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with Iranian officials and the ambassadors of Muslim countries on auspicious occasion of Eid al-Fitr on April 10th, 2024.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful, all praise is due to God, Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings be upon our Master and our Prophet, Abul Qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad, and his untainted, pure, immaculate, guiding, and well-guided chosen progeny, particularly the remnant of God on earth. I would like to congratulate all the honorable people here in this meeting, including the honorable officials from various organizations within the country, as well as the entire Iranian nation on the auspicious occasion of Eid al-Fitr. I would also like to extend my congratulations to our guests here, the ambassadors of Islamic countries, and to all the Muslim nations. We hope, God willing, that this Eid will be a true celebration and a source of joy and blessings for the entire Islamic Ummah.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
First of all, I feel it necessary to once again refer to the special spiritual atmosphere of the month of Ramadan in our country. The reason I emphasize this is because we should appreciate and preserve the spiritual atmosphere, which included gatherings for reciting supplications, beseeching God, praying the prayers in groups, thriving mosques, people helping others, and giving iftar, the meal for breaking the fast, in mosques and on the streets. In other words, people truly showed their merit during this month of Ramadan in spiritual aspects with their recitations of the Quran and other practices, in social aspects by providing assistance and financial help to people, particularly the underprivileged, and also in political aspects. The rally that took place on Quds Day was a remarkable international political move. Where else can you see such a thing? The information that we have received this year from the experts that we are familiar with tells us there was truly a public outcry in the country on Quds Day. There were larger crowds than seen in previous years. These are truly something to be grateful for. I sincerely thank our dear nation for taking the initiative and moving forward in all of these different fields. However, merely expressing our gratitude in words to our dear nation is not enough.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
A two-day international forum dubbed What Future for Palestine kicked off in Rome on Saturday. The initiative, organized by an opposition group called Front of Dissent, has been put together to tackle different topics, namely Zionism, its impact on Palestine and West Asia, the nature of Israel, what changes for the Palestinian resistance after October 7, West Asia in its transition to a multipolar world, and the risk of the Ukraine war escalating into a global conflict. The conference was attended by citizens who are very concerned about the turn the situation has taken in Western countries.
Today's forum is an important attempt to break down the wall of silence surrounding Zionist wrongdoings in West Asia. It is appalling how our mainstream media are covering Israel's brutal war in Gaza. They have created a parallel world and a parallel truth with the aim of covering up the bad things Israel is doing.
The superpowers that support Zionism are former colonial powers, most of them. And they had a role in creating Zionism in the first place. Many people allowed the Zionists to really empower themselves. So they were originally empowered by people who probably had a sense of guilt about the Holocaust, but eventually they became so powerful that they are able to control so many media outlets. They are able to control many politicians.
Speakers at the conference included former diplomats, politicians, journalists, and activists from several countries, including China, the US, Britain, Russia, and many others. Video links were also established with the spokesman for the worldwide anti-Zionist religious group, Neturei Karta International. Analysts at the conference are saying that the aftershocks of the Gaza crisis triggered by Israeli genocidal war are highly likely to reach far beyond West Asia and the Africa region, with the US credibility as a regional security guarantor shot to pieces. West Asia might see increased diplomatic engagement from China and Russia.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan received the head of the Hamas political bureau, Ismail Haniyeh, in Istanbul. During the meeting that lasted for more than 2.5 hours, the two sides discussed the Israeli aggression on Gaza, ways and measures to ensure uninterrupted and sufficient delivery of humanitarian aid to Gaza, and a lasting peace in the West Asia region. During the meeting, President Erdogan stated that amid ongoing tensions in the region, it is important to keep the world's attention on Gaza and not allow the Israeli regime to achieve political gains from its standoff with Iran. In a statement published by the Turkish presidency, Erdogan said, "It is vital that Palestinians act with unity in this process. The strongest response to Israel and the path to victory lie in unity and integrity."
Today's meeting was very important for both Turkey and Hamas to set ground for the upcoming changes. We all know now Qatar is hosting Hamas Bureau and leaders as well as playing the role of mediator in negotiations with Israel. While there is a pressure from Washington for Hamas to leave Qatar, and there is the question of where will Hamas go now, we know that the relation of Hamas and Syria is getting better, and it already has a good relation with Iran. But I don't think they are a choice, and for that, Turkey will be the best option.
Analysts say Turkey will not only be hosting Hamas movement leaders and bureau, but will also take the lead in mediating to reach a lasting solution for the Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
Turkey is trying to play a very important role that is bigger than working on reaching a ceasefire in Gaza. It is rather solving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and trying to reach a lasting solution. The 7th of October was a turning point to start working on reaching a lasting solution, and I think Turkey's role is a key for it to maintain good relations with all sides.
Hamas had an office in Turkey since 2011, and Turkey mediated in exchange of prisoners. Turkish president maintains warm relations with Haniyeh and says he will always defend the Palestinian cause. Today's meeting takes place against the backdrop of Qatar potentially stepping back from ceasefire talks. This development could create a vacancy that Ankara is well positioned to fill, given Turkey's established relations, particularly with the Hamas movement, which many view as a strategic advantage. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
According to the Palestinian Ministry of Health, more than 70% of the fatalities of the brutal Israeli aggression against the Gaza Strip are children and women. Likewise, according to reports issued by the Euro-Mediterranean Center for Human Rights, women and children in Gaza are enduring displacement, death, pain, and suffering in a way that the human mind cannot bear. More than 80% are living in tents without the minimum basic needs to live, without water, without food, with a chilling cold. The current situation is pushing them to the limit, making it impossible to focus on anything but survival.
Today, innocent civilians are placed in inhumane conditions which do not possess the most basic requirements for human survival. When it comes to children and women, the suffering becomes more painful because women's needs are greater. Women today live in tents. There is no bathroom. There is no toilet. They cannot take care of themselves. They have to stand in long lines in front of men's bathrooms, and this means double suffering. Also, do not forget pregnant women or those who gave birth during the attack. We're talking about an aggression that affects all vital aspects.
Pregnant women and those who have given birth in the midst of war are one of the most affected groups. Similarly, the United Nations Population Fund estimated that since the beginning of the Israeli aggression on the Gaza Strip, approximately 60,000 women are pregnant, and of them, 5,500 would give birth soon, many of them by cesarean section. This means that terrible hospital sanitary conditions, as well as the food crisis, will endanger their lives and the lives of newborn babies.
Pregnant women are suffering from extreme cold, food shortages, and medicine shortages.